Testing.
Sounds funny.
Test.
Yeah.
It's funny, like, you're talking about, like, customer, I don't know, like, better customer service or whatever, or, like, you dealing, you complaining as a customer.
Yeah,
like,
the OESC has just messed up my address 3 times, and no one likes working at the OESC, I'm sure. And I don't like contacting them to fix my shit. That's what I was talking about. Yeah.
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 Epic. It's just funny because now that I just like am looking at customer complaints all day, like I'm looking at that data, just like customer support tickets, stuff like that, just hundreds. Like yesterday I manually read through like 300 or 400 tickets to like manually try and trim down data and find false positives. And it's just, it's really funny actually just to see like
the problems people are having.
Well, the problems, but then sometimes it's a response, so you don't even have the context. You just kind of have a follow-up, like a salty follow-up, just randomly. You can just read it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And there's just, you know, thousands.
What's frustrating is, like, people usually know what their problem is, too. Like, in my situation, I knew I wasn't getting crucial information in the mail from them for, like, months. So I was like, obviously my fucking address is fucked up. And so then it's just frustrating because you can hardly talk to someone or a good AI automated system that can take care of it for you. And it's like, you know what the problem is. I don't know, like, half of those complaints, if they knew what their problem was. But yeah, in my situation, I did. And yeah, it's like, that's the most frustrating part is, you know what's wrong. People who work there probably know what's wrong too. But like the way to interface with them is fucked right now. I feel like, and I feel like it's fucked because we're in that process of moving over, you know, to like a more possibly AI centered like system when it comes to like customer service and
just everything monotonous that involves information communication or information change or anything. Yeah. Like all that's going to get automated eventually. And like, we want it to be automated in a sense, like a lot of it's drudgery work and things that people don't want to do, but you know, all of the other, a bunch of other stuff comes along with it as well that obviously, you know, people are scared about, and people like Andrew Yang talk about it, and there's all these news stories about it, so people are aware of that and already kind of making FUD about that. But
I've been
there's always both sides, like when it comes to technology, there's always like, it's always a double-sided sword.
Yeah,
there's always benefits along with detriments.
I've been kind of scared of it before too, but now I just kept realizing that it might provide more avenues for people to do what they actually want to do. They don't have to be stuck working at the Oklahoma Employment Security Commission or whatever the fuck it is, OESC or whatever. Like, they don't have to work there. They don't have to work as a cashier at a grocery store. They don't have to work these shitty jobs. They could go and try and be what they want to be, and while the jobs that they would be working are just going to be automated. But then I could see the other side where people are like, oh, they're going to take away all of our jobs. Like, I can see why people would be scared, but I think it is going to be more of a benefit.
Yeah,
personally,
the whole topic is a Pandora's box, because like, I definitely agree with your points, and there's like merit to them, but this is also the classic tech utopianist argument, or like what people call tech utopianist, or I think that's basically the one term, but the classic or the key person in this category is I just forgot his name all of a sudden. I'll think of it in a minute. He's the Singularity is Near guy. He wrote books, you know, The Singularity is Near, How to Create a Mind. I'm forgetting his name.
It's all good.
The Singularity University. Anyway, he's just someone that's made these future predictions that are very positive about how computers will advance. And a lot of his predictions have been correct. But he has this idea of how and when we'll merge with computers and AI. But it's all positive. It's all wrapped up in this like tech utopianist
I feel like we've really talked about him on here before, actually, like our first couple episodes. That sounds vaguely familiar.
We might have. Let me...
yeah, go ahead.
But he has, like...
Because I swear it was like the third or fourth episode. We talked about something to do with AI in the very beginning, I think over Discord.
Yeah, it's Ray Kurzweil. That's okay. Who it is.
Ray Kurzweil. But,
you know, and he's a weird guy. He wants to, like, bring back his dad.
In an AI form. See, that's where I'm like, that's where you lose me. That type of shit. even if it gets explained to me in a very deep way and, like, a very, like, I don't know, way that makes sense, I don't think I'm ever going to be on board with that, per se.
Well, exactly.
But I'm not, like, staunchly against it. I don't want anything to do with that.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that I'm staunchly against it, but it's just like that gives you a glimpse into the possibility. this person's mind.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing is, when you spend so long just like at the edge of technology, at the edge of advances of technology, and you understand AI and you're building it and you're communicating with other people building it, like you're just so wrapped up in that world, you get to the point to where he's at, where he's an older guy, he thinks he's going to live forever. Mm. Like he's trying to get into what he describes as escape velocity or escape trajectory, where basically you live long enough to the point to where you're catching up with technology's ability to heal you and keep you alive.
Yeah.
So he takes like 60 pills every day. You know, he
sounds
keeps
like he's
this,
living in hell. Honestly, well, like he's creating his own hell by.
Just
increasing
like
his chance of staying on this rock.
Well, you know, it's kind of a classic human hubris to like avoid death or think that he's immortal. Like that's a very classic archetype. So it should make anyone, even the most simple person, suspect. But you know, like he even said he keeps his dad's music. Like his dad was a composer. He keeps his dad music, just thousands of documents, physical documents, like hard drives. And he thinks that, you know, that one day the AI will be able to write music that his dad, only his dad could have written, you know,
that's
only his dad could have imagined. And
yeah,
and it's like when he talks about the details, you're like, okay, I can kind of see how that's like sweet and how you're doing it out of respect for your dad. And you're not saying that it's going to replace him, but
right. It's
like, it's also like a crazy, you know, that would be some kind of sci-fi novel.
I mean, at least someone's doing it. I'll give him that. Like, at least there's one person that's doing something like
that.
Well,
he's trying to rile up an army of people to follow his philosophy, which is tech utopianism. And it's like, I don't know. It's nice if that happens. Like, I'm not trying to say, like, I'm against, you know, positive narratives and positive visions for the future. But it's like, I we need to be pragmatic as far as just considering that there are things to build, things to do, improvements to be made, and yeah, technology's moving fast. But
I mean, speaking of though, you're moving fast to a techie job, right?
Yeah.
Segway.
Yeah, nice. I went on Sunday, May the 2nd. I worked my last shift as a delivery boy.
Congrats, bro.
I got yelled at by Karen, hopefully for the last time, over the phone, because we didn't deliver to her zone. Our delivery zone didn't deliver to her house. And then the next
day...
What'd
she say? I'm like 6 minutes away or something? I had someone
like,
say
I'm
that
like
to
a
me.
Mile away. That's what they always say. I'm like a mile away. It's like, listen, if you were really a mile away, you would be within the zone.
Yeah. You
ain't just
in
get
the
to,
zone.
Yeah.
You ain't in the zone.
You don't get to round it down if it's past anyway. And then the next day, May the 3rd, I started my first day as a software engineer.
Nice.
And so that was a pretty stark change, and I'm pretty floored. I'm pretty shocked. I don't know. I just finished my first week, so I'm definitely not used to any of it, but
yeah, well, how was it? Tell us a little bit about it, if you want. I mean.
Well, you know, I can only say so much, but it's a lot of setting things up. You know, that's how it is for any like
orientation type stuff. Kind of.
Well, so, yeah, orientation, meeting people. Like I've probably met like 20 people one-on-one and like 20 minute plus conversations, like introduced myself multiple times, told my quote unquote story so many times, like backstory or whatever. And you know, that can be pretty exhausting, but it's cool. People are nice. And, but you know, I'm basically going to be working with data and like trimming data to put into machine learning AI algorithms to like improve their accuracy. And so, you know, that's why I'm, that's one of the reasons I'm floored is like, I'm not really sure why they chose me. You know, they're kind of a startup. I think they thought I was a scrappy type of person, you know, like, I don't know, figures things out on their own, like that type of person. But, yeah, I don't know. It's pretty crazy, but it's been a long journey. I've been working towards this for a long time. Like, this was kind of my goal. I wanted to work at a startup as a software engineer. Like, 4 years ago, if you asked me, like, that's basically what I would have said my goal was. But I also, there were six other things I was doing at the same time. So I didn't really know if that was the real one or if it was like, oh, I'm going to, any of the other things, like we've talked about all of our failed projects, you know, like the YouTube channel or like I did day trading for a little while or I like all
were
these.
Were you selling stuff on eBay too?
So, yeah, I had an eBay store that I got up to like thousands of dollars.
Nice.
Where I was just like flipping items and kind of decided I hated it. So like I was doing all of these experiments at the same time, basically just trying to say like, I'm trying, like, you know, like I'm trying to figure out what, how the hell I'm going to make it. And you know, one of those was like, and yeah, just an interest in technology that, you know, I pressed into it and it kept on going. And you know, like, we talked a little bit about this stuff with Caleb, just, you know, you just kind of feel lucky. Like I feel lucky and it's hard to feel like in hindsight, too many things.
The imposter syndrome starts kicking in a little bit.
Yeah. And it's just like, you don't know when you're making decisions, you don't know if you're making the right decisions, but then you look back in hindsight. And for me, there's like a few particular decisions that if I would have done anything else, I could have, it could have been 3 or 4 more years before I even got my first job.
Yeah. That's wild to think about, I'm sure.
Exactly. And that's the thing that has me feeling just like humbled and like shocked and just not really feeling like I earned it even fully.
Well, it's important to notice that, like,
just humility, I guess humility.
Yeah. Yeah. It's important to notice where, you know, you know where you made the right decision or the wrong decision, because then you can learn from it. And like, if a similar situation pops up, then you'll know, you know. Sometimes not, though. Sometimes you just have to make a spur of the moment decision, and that's just how it goes.
Yeah, and you try and be smart. Like, I tried to be smart. I tried to have a plan, but really my strengths and my weaknesses came into account in the end. Mm-hmm. So like one of my weaknesses, being kind of lazy.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I dropped out of school and went to like this other school is basically because I was lazy. But, you know, there's kind of a jokes among software developers or whatever, that like a good developer is lazy, meaning that like they'll find tasks you should automate and automate them, or they won't do something super manually. They'll just look it up and take someone else's solution. So kind of just like a pragmatic laziness.
Yeah.
And, you know, but that's just like me. That's just the way I would have done things anyway. And like some people are more perfectionist or more like detail oriented, and they have other strengths and other opportunities that would have opened up to them. But it's kind of like, if you just look to one person in one example and you try and mimic that, like, I love, someone else said this, I forgot who, but I love it. It's like taking someone else's winning lottery ticket numbers. It's like so much stuff doesn't apply generally. Most of the stuff that does is probably like in the Bible or in the Quran, or, you know, like they're fundamental truths.
Yeah.
But most other like advice or stuff in, I don't know, the self-help world or anything like that, it's just other people giving you their lottery ticket numbers.
I love that classic trait of the lazy, like, genius, or maybe not even lazy, but like the slacker genius. That's like, I know what I can do, but like, I'm not doing it right now. Type of, I've always loved that trait. Like whenever I see it in displayed in like movies or books, I don't know, those characters. I like those characters a lot.
Yeah. There's kind of an archetype.
There's a personality in it. In my opinion.
Yeah, like Huckleberry Finn or something. Yeah. I don't know. Like, there's some kind of archetype there. And even, like, the tech startups or whatever, like, they... See, the tech startup world is kind of like the underground music scene, except everyone thinks and is trying to make $1 billion. Mm-hmm. So it's like... Yeah. Everyone's like really scrappy and doing things themselves and like networking, and it's super like niche and it's really deep if you get into it, and there's a community and all that. But in the back of everyone's minds, they're like, I'm trying to make $1 billion.
Mm.
And something about that just really changes anything.
Mm-hmm.
Not to insult it, like, it's... what it is, I don't know. There's a lot.
Well, I mean, that's a good. That's it, a good different. That's it's good to point out. I mean, it's good to recognize that.
Yeah, and it's just like you're in a different game. Mm-hmm. Like when I first met with my boss, who I won't specifically name, but you know, has been involved with other companies before and is now very involved in this prominent company. You know, before I got in the meeting, I remember thinking, like, this is without a doubt going to be the richest person I've ever talked to.
Wow.
Like, with, I don't even have to, like, know the number specific. Like, probably by an order of magnitude or two,
yeah,
this person has more money than anyone I've personally spoken to. And it's like, I don't really know what that means. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I'm noticing it. Like, I don't necessarily care. But it's just... I don't know. It's like a different level that you're in. And I don't know. Gonna be exploring that space and thinking about it. But for right now, I'm just kind of quiet and trying to learn my job.
Yeah.
But
yeah. I mean, that's cool. It's exciting. I don't know. I mean, as far as the podcast goes, we'll just be moving back to having video. Because we'll be doing most stuff remote. We'll be talking to each other over Zoom or Discord or something.
Yep.
Might even have a show Discord. We don't know yet. We're still talking about possible ideas. But
yeah, we're maybe going to do like a megasode or something for episode 25.
Mm-hmm.
Or episode 30 or whichever number, even number happens to work out for us. But.
Mainly like works that out for you because you're the one moving. You're the one getting buckling down and getting ready to, do all that shit.
Yeah, I'll be free in the evening. I'll be free in a different way because I've been strapped for a long time and like only having a day off a week type of thing. And that's the day we do the podcast.
Same here.
And so that's really having a hard job, but it's like you're not worrying about money.
Yeah,
I don't know, like that's gonna be where I'm at, so it's more of, there's a different type of freedom there, like I'm gonna be able to come back each evening and shit, I could do a podcast each evening almost,
right,
if I really wanted to, I don't.
Right. Right. Yeah.
You know, maybe we can move it up to twice a week, but
no, one a week is fine with me. Uploading it on Monday, like I don't think the schedule should change. But
we got a good thing going.
For sure.
But it's funny, something I'm just like pulling up stories I've seen over the past few weeks that have popped up to me. And one thing kind of in this realm of like data and technology, do you know the Signal app?
Mm-hmm.
They're just like a privacy chat app basically that's gotten really popular. And they're a unique organization because they're like not a for-profit company.
Mm-hmm. Different than WhatsApp because WhatsApp is with Facebook, right?
Yeah, Facebook owns WhatsApp. WhatsApp used to be what private. You would call encrypted end-to-end, which means like truly private user-to-user. And now that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
But Signal is like that alternative. And Signal has like 100 million or something users. Like they've become one of the most popular, not a big tech company like type of apps.
Including the creator of Facebook. That's how I learned about Signal. Well, I've used Signal before, but it came back into my frame of reference because I saw that he was using it or something after saying that like WhatsApp is completely encrypted and fine to use or something like that. I don't know. It was a couple weeks ago. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, no, that says a lot. But Signal had they launched probably the coolest ad campaign I've ever seen. What they did is if you pay for ads on Instagram, which Facebook owns, if you're in that whole ecosystem, you get super specific identifiers for people so that you can advertise to them. And so all that Signal did is they just produce an ad with text that showed your personal identifiers. So like, here's an example. It's you got this ad because you're a goth barista and you're single. This ad used your location to see you're in Clinton Hill and you're either vegan or lactose intolerant and you're really feeling that yoga lately. That's not me, by the way. But that was just someone else on Twitter. But it's just like they have these specific keyword identifiers, your location, your diet, your activities, and they're just showing it to you. And of course, everyone who makes ads has access to these things. They don't show you these things. They just use them to advertise to you. But Signal showed them to the user, and Facebook shut down their ads. Facebook and Instagram. Yeah.
That's great.
They censored them. It was,
that's funny.
Yeah.
I've noticed that on my Instagram, I get ads for healthy stuff now because I've been changing my diet up the past like two months. I've been changing my diet up and been trying to get healthier, eating better. And yeah, my ads have gone from Domino's and like super cheesy, bready, gooey meals to like smoothies and
chicken sandwiches 5 days in a row.
It's gone to fruits and veggies and nuts and protein powders and like all this shit, like drastic, like in a week. Just completely changed around, which I can't really complain. I'm not gonna buy any of it, just like I wasn't buying anything they were showing me before. But
yeah,
it's interesting to see how it changes. It's like what you start talking about influences what you're seeing on this little device.
Yeah, pretty instantly. It's pretty close feedback.
It's even happened where other people were saying shit and I didn't say it, and then an ad popped up in Discord. I had headphones on in Discord. Someone said something. I can't remember what example it was, but then literally an ad. I think they were talking about a video game, and the ad for the video game came onto my feed while I was still in the Discord talking to them, scrolling.
Yeah.
Might have been a coincidence, but it was still pretty freaky.
Yeah, and you never know how those things are interconnected on the back end, like who can access whose data.
Yeah.
And like there's like the keyword recognition, like if you say, you know, like Nestle, you know, it's like now all Let's five of my now. Computers picked up.
Yeah. Nestle, you know, Nestle, 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 Nestle. Yeah. Just hold up your phone and say it. Hold your phone up to the speaker whenever I say that and see what happens.
Yeah.
Listener.
We should get their ad dollars now.
Dang. Yeah. Nestle sponsor us.
Yeah.
But Nestle, Nestle, Nestle.
But if you, well, like, it's funny, like, you're saying you're, like, switching to, like, healthier habits, and they're advertising you healthy stuff, and you would think, like, oh, well, that's good. They're, like,
encouraging me.
Yeah. But I don't know. It's not.
I thought the unhealthy food habits would smack back harder. Like, they'd be like, you want this fucking cookie cake dumped with ice cream and peanut butter and...
Well, see, like, that's... The funny thing is, like, probably at night, if you, like, I bet if you wake up in the middle of the night and then go to your social feed at, like, 2 a.m., then the algorithm will know, like, oh, there's a high correlation.
Show me some dirty shit.
Yeah,
some,
like, Uber Eats, ice cream.
Fudge-filled brownies.
Yeah.
Like, some nasty shit.
Yeah, exactly. They want to get you all your week.
Yeah, yeah.
But
can't do it because I go to bed early, bitch.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's funny, like, a lot of what I've seen that's in a similar vein, if you're trying to learn almost anything, like, if you're trying to learn how to exercise or just, like, learn education about almost anything on the internet, like you'll get hit by the self-help algorithms or like the I'm looking up coding videos or something. Mm-hmm. And there's very legitimate channels that are just like how to code, like coding tutorials. But then there's some that are like half how to code and half self-help guru.
Mm.
And YouTube will like almost optimize for the half self-help guru. Just kind of like how it optimizes for the half outrage conspiracy genre as well. Like if you're into like, oh, just earth science.
Right.
And then the suggestive video is going to be earth science plus
outraged conspiracy.
Yeah, something flamboyant. And just like if you're almost like the version of that for education, it's like, oh, I'm trying to just, you know, learn some basic finance principles. And then the YouTube algorithm will be like, how to trade Dogecoin to 1 million or like, you know, how I...
Next thing you know, you're in a hole and it's an hour later and you're watching conspiracy YouTube videos.
Yeah, exactly. Or you're signing up for a paid trading group on Discord.
Yeah.
which there are thousands.
I've joined something not like that. I've just joined too many Discords of people trying to start up games and trying to get people to test them out for free, essentially. Trying to get hype surrounded by a game. So I've fallen ill to it, but not the same type of thing. Just people being like, we're making this game. If you come into the Discord, you can try and play it. And like, it never happens. I think I've joined like 10. Making a game is hard, though, I'm sure. I'm sure that's going to be really hard.
Definitely. But there's more people kind of trying to do it and like saying that like, hey, we're doing it and trying to. It's like the tools like Discord, they let someone who has a legitimate operation that's hard to start up.
Mm-hmm.
It gives them access to like an audience or a community that they can build pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
But that also makes it to where the people who are kind of like bullshitters and wouldn't actually fully build the thing, they can go ahead and skip the important starting steps and just like market themselves. And,
right.
You know, it's like when people create a social media brand or whatever, or clothing brand, and you're like, okay. And they start by launching, they start not by launching a product or something like that. They just like are trying to hype it up.
Dude, what if Discord just like copied Clubhouse's model and had a room for that?
Well, I mean, a lot of companies are trying to
do that,
kind of copy the Clubhouse model. Yeah,
like
Twitter,
Discord would be great for Spaces.
That.
Discord would be great. No,
it's the same thing. Yeah, Twitter launched it very soon after Clubhouse. Was gaining popularity.
Classic. I love it when that shit happens.
It's just shameless.
I love it. It's like so funny.
But they're racing after the money. You know, that's their.
Catch the bag.
Yeah. they're racing after the money bag.
Yeah.
Speaking of money bags, I'm looking at pics right now. This Cybertruck reveal.
Dude, if I were to get a Tesla, I would get the Cybertruck.
Or this is like, well, there's been the reveal. These are just like new pics. They like had a showing in Manhattan or whatever. I don't like. It's kind of ugly. Like,
that's why I love it.
But
that's why I love it.
Yeah, something about the way it's ugly. Just
you can haul stuff. You can sleep in it.
Yeah,
it's like armored, isn't it?
Yeah, it's bulletproof and it has bulletproof glass.
That's
on
scary.
It.
That's kind of scary though.
Well, that's the opposite. That's gonna make you feel safer.
Yeah, but like
you're gonna need that.
I don't feel safe because I don't have any money. Like that's fucked.
Yeah, you're more at risk of the
exactly
the debt collector.
Exactly,
gonna come take that shit.
Yeah, yeah. Like I'm fucked.
Well, dude, if you're driving in you know 2022, if you're cruising through LA, you're gonna need
those.
Well, the cops already have bulletproof cars.
That's true. Do they?
Yeah.
Let's test it. I'm just kidding. That's not.
Yo, that reminds me. Did you see the video of the dudes that are like in, they're like driving a money transfer vehicle or a gold transfer vehicle.
I saw that.
And they
get shot at.
Yeah, and they get shot at. And it's just like a cam video, like showing them, like, it's crazy. It just looks like an action scene. It's just like,
here's
what it takes to transport.
The passenger has like an AR, like, he has to pull out.
Yeah.
That dynamic between them very much looked like the guy driving has been through that, and the dude in the passenger was like, what the fuck?
Like, yeah.
That's kind of what how I perceived it, but...
Totally. It says here, the video looks like they got the most shares. It says, South Africa, crumbling economy, day in the life of a cash and transit crew.
They're almost like pirates. I mean, they're essentially pirates, like coming up on a big ship and trying to take the loot, trying to board the ship or like sink it and take everything. Yeah. It's like the vibe it gave me. It's a very like pursuit and I don't know. Yeah, it's an action movie.
Yeah, it's the modern equivalent of that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting. You've got like, because the guys that are trying to steal the cash, they're what, pirates, gang members, they're off the grid, you know, groups of people trying to like steal to live. But then the crew themselves that are transporting the cash, they're almost like mercs, almost like mercenaries. Cause are they, I don't know, maybe they're government, agent, like transporting cash for the government. But you know, you've got like private companies, especially in places like Africa,
mm-hmm.
where they have to hire private, basically a private military, or like marijuana companies, because they have to deal in cash. Like they've got these mm-hmm. crazy like militia merc groups that transport cash for them. And I don't know. It's interesting. It's kind of like in the vein of all these sci-fi movies and games. Like a game I always liked was Metal Gear Solid 4. And that's a huge part of it, is that there's like private military corporations and they like fight over each, like fight each other, like as if they were nations, something like that. Not that that's happening, but you know, it's just like, it's crazy. You're here in America and we just cash app each other, but you go somewhere else and you see
what it's really like.
Yeah, exactly. How the money problems are different and of a wider scope.
Oh yeah.
Like, how do I even get money to point A from point B without fucking dying?
Yeah. Yeah, I say I'm fucked with money. I'm fucked when it comes to money, but there are people that are in worse
in the context of America.
It's
maybe. But even then, people are doing rough right now.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
This is a thought, or I guess an area of thought that I've been bouncing around with for a while, like kind of in the whole self-help realm of things. You know, you get, there's a whole genre of self-help now, and all of these books and all these new gurus and stuff like that. And a lot of the narratives around that are, they like use science to reinforce the self-help ideas. Like, I don't know. Have you heard of like The Secret? Like that's one of the most popular.
I don't think so.
Self-help movement types of books.
Read a lot of, I think I've only read like 2 self-help books. Maybe 3.
That's good. You're not missing out. Like not that I consume a lot of the stuff, but like I've dipped into it, because if you're truly like, for me, when I was, you know, years back trying to take just kind of more basic responsibility for myself and some different ways, you know, very humbly, I just approached all of the information I could and just be like, okay, is there signal to this? You know, even though I've always, self-help stuff has always made me cringe, I was like, all right, I'm just going to humbly approach this and just say like, is there stuff here, you know, like Tony Robbins or whatever, is there stuff to Tony Robbins? Like what's the magic there? Is he just a master persuader? Or things like that. And but anyway, the secret, there's this whole ideas around it, like manifestation or manifesting your reality, if you've heard of that, or like vision boards, like people that make those. And that's kind of the idea of the secret is that all these people that you look up to that have achieved amazing things, the secret is that really, they just focused on it with all of their energy and this idea that you can manifest your future. And it's interesting because, well, they use all these celebrity examples where this has seemed to happen, kind of. Like Oprah's is an example, somewhat. I don't know Oprah's story super well, but she was very focused and very ambitious and very persistent over time, mm-hmm. and then reached, you know, superstar status and trailblazed the way for like black women basically in the public eye. Jim Carrey is one I know like well, mm-hmm. where was that Jim Carrey? Yeah, that was where
like, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
Jim Carrey would like go to like some overlook for Hollywood or something like every night and would just like imagine himself becoming like the most popular new movie star or something like this. Or, another one is, what's his name? Sylvester Stallone with the first Rocky movie. Like he was like broke and homeless and like had to sell his dog and wrote Rocky and was like trying to pitch it to people and just, you know, how ambitious to be homeless and write a script alone, but it'd be Rocky and then also demand that you are the lead character.
Yeah.
So
a lot of writers, comedians, actors start out homeless too. It's crazy the amount of them that do, especially in Hollywood, just because it's so expensive.
Yeah. And it's kind of an archetype in a sense, but you know, and so these are, you know, just touching on, those are a few stories of many that people like this point to. And it's kind of like you would call that, I guess, confirmation bias or like winners bias or whatever, like, because you're looking at the winners, the ones whom it worked for versus the thousands. You don't know how many thousands tried that same exact thing or a similar equivalent thing, and it didn't work.
Well, it's interesting, too, because I've, not to get too woo-woo with it, but I've, in my past, have learned about, like, magic with a K, like, and that's essentially what they teach. Like, at first, it's very confusing, but when you get down to it, the essential teachings of magic or whatever, you creating, quote-unquote, magic in this world is your mind manifest, like essentially just having that positive affirmation and like imagining. And I mean, they have different like ways of doing it, practices, rituals, whatever you want to call them, like consistent things you do every week to enforce that type of thinking. That's all that it really is. And once you get down to it, but there's a lot you have to read to get to that like just final point where you're like, oh, I understand now.
Yeah. And there's,
it's like it's a madman's way to get to that. There's an easier way to get to it. You shouldn't read about magic. Don't read about magic. Don't. It seems interesting and intriguing, and if you want to do it for art, that's cool, but it's maddening.
It's just kind of like heavy philosophy almost.
Yeah. Well, and there's so many different people that came from different variations of life that practiced it, that it's like, it is interesting to learn about, but it also, they wrote a lot of books and there's a lot of old type of writing that you have to get through, like biblical style sentences where you're just like, you have to read it like 8 times and then you know what they're saying finally.
Mm-hmm.
It's, yeah. Anyways.
Yeah, no, totally. I kind of think that a lot of these similar ideas, like manifesting, you could put that kind of in a lot of different ways. Like maybe you're saying, oh, well, maybe I'm not manifesting a physical future or a physical situation, but maybe I'm manifesting a state. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a lot of Eastern philosophy and like Buddhism. And Christianity is almost like you're manifesting into the image of God or something, like sanctification or whatever. That's what that process is supposed to be, like repentance.
Mm-hmm.
That's almost like a manifestation. And kind of like an iterative process almost. But so there's truth to it. And that's the thing that catches a lot of people, is there's truth to it. And even when I look back at my own life, and by the way, get just another point in here, like I'm entertaining these ideas, I'm not saying that I put weight on these ideas. I think that it could potentially be dangerous.
I think that goes for both of us in this whole episode.
That's a whole, we're always kind of just exploring ideas freely, like I'm not saying I'm not into it necessarily, but anyway, with that being said, if I look back at my own life, like getting into music was a first thing that was feels like the, how, when people describe the process of manifesting, that's mm-hmm. like, oh, well, that sounds like what I did mm-hmm. to get into music, which is just that I obsessed about it. I listened yep. to certain types of music. I would imagine myself playing music in a band every night mm-hmm. when I was going to sleep and would focus on it. And that almost primed my mind to when the, just the niche butterfly effect opportunities arose, I took them. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, irrepeatable sequence of events happened, and then I ended up in a situation where now I've played music the last decade. And the types of bands that I wanted to play and imagine playing in when I was a kid, you know, maybe not with all of the specific
right. bells and things, whistles.
Bells and whistles that I imagined, but, you know, like, in a sense, it was like, well, if I look back on my past, I feel like I've kind of mm-hmm. manifested that reality.
Yeah.
Or even what we were talking about earlier, like getting into software. Like, mm-hmm. you look back and you're like, I couldn't have chosen these. I couldn't have been smart enough to make these right sequence of choices. There's a type of randomness there, but a focused, lucky randomness that took mm-hmm. place. And it was almost like I just primed my mind. I became the type of person that would have those opportunities after few years of obsession and focus.
Well, I think that it just proves that the subconscious is way more powerful than we give it credit. I mean, and we obviously yeah. people are learning that every day now, like more and more, but
yeah, we put more and more weight on that, like over the years.
It yeah. seems. I mean, it definitely makes us feel like you said, like we think it's random sometimes, but really it could just be our subconscious, like doing things that we just don't even know. Like we don't even realize we're thinking about something a certain way, or we don't even, maybe I know for me, it just became like a reality of imagining being in a band one day. I was just like, this is just reality. This is just like what I do. Like when I'm driving in the car with my family and I'm listening to music on my headphones, like I'm thinking about being in a band, or I'm thinking about how much I like this song and I want to write one like it. Like, yeah, you kind of just train your subconscious to then become something, almost, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there's truly, whether or not the full manifesting argument is true, there is truth to a degree. There is some percentage of just gains of character and gains of opportunity that seem to take place for those who prime themselves with like positive or just forward thinking mm-hmm. or, you know, thinking that they're capable, mm-hmm. Thinking that something is possible, or having like positive feelings or emotions towards, you know, something happening. Like, it goes without saying that there's weight to stuff like that. Like, you'll be better off doing that than not doing it. Mm-hmm. But like the whole argument is to what degree that goes. And really that gets into the religious realm, because yeah. Depending on how far you take it, you might take it to like say that, oh, well, God is within us, or, mm-hmm. you know, consciousness is God, or, mm-hmm. we're swimming in love, or yeah. you know, whatever you yeah. might say or might put on it. Like, it gets to religious levels, but then on the other side, it gets to where scientists argue about it, or whatever. Scientists have their beliefs on what the subconscious does and what the human mind does. Like, they think we have no free will or something like that. Mm. And so it's like a really contentious topic, and it's like, I don't know, like I stumbled on it just more of like I'm trying to figure out my own shit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I like stumbled into this whole, like, this seemed like this strange philosophical structure that's like, well, how should I think of my own mind, or like my own subconscious, or like think of how should I prime myself to engage with the world? Like, what makes sense? Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know. Like, do you have any stories from like your family, like of like your grandpa, your uncles or something? Cause like you hear stories of like, oh, like your great uncle would, you know, he would go into the woods every day and like say his prayers with God. Mm. And like, you hear these little practices and you're like, yeah, like it just sounds like someone who has faith, but it also sounds like someone who has like a very intentional, like, mental practice that.
I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of my, at least on my mom's side, a lot of my family was like that. I mean, they were basically, they've just always been like large scale gardeners, essentially. Like, they've always had big gardens, and they would just plant like tomato. They would plant like essentially food to eat to survive, and then they would go out and hunt to eat. Like, that's pretty much the only reason why they did it. And so they've always been like working with their hands, blue collar type.
Mm-hmm. And it probably a deep respect for like nature.
Yeah. And that and like animals. God created nature, and like that old, like old school belief, almost like Irish farmer.
And God like, is in the wind and the trees. And
yeah.
The
yeah. Like, yeah. So, I mean, definitely there were plenty of, you know, stories of that, of them like going out in the woods with only four bullets, and that means they need to come back with four animals, or like pray and like make sure you like are good and you pray and like all that stuff, and like you'll be blessed and things
you'll
like
have
the,
a good bounce.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
literally,
exactly. Yeah, yeah. No, all it, the while they'd look at like Farmer's Almanac and like take other things, and you know, but I mean, still, I mean, yeah. They were definitely like that. I'm sure there are some distinct stories I can't think of right at the moment, but yeah.
No, for sure. Me as well. I just kind of, it's just like kind of a vague sentiment that you hear, but like if you look at stuff like that, like an evolutionary psychologist or something would look at that and think that like, oh, it makes sense that Christianity has provokes or encourages behaviors like this because they're like anti-fragile behaviors, or they're behaviors that have good fitness in nature. You know, like saying, like praying, praying for strength before you go to bed, praying for courage, or all the community aspects, you know, all these things you could point to. There's kind of a seed of truth in there, like for all of them, that's kind of just like, that's pragmatic. I keep on using this word pragmatic, and that it's, I guess by it, I just mean that it's like, it's a thing, it's just a solid choice, no matter if you believe in it, or no matter if you have a philosophical or moral view about it. It's kind of just like, yeah, this is a choice that makes sense.
And it just exists. What's crazy is, I think, not to sound like a boomer, but I think that's kind of why Christianity is, it seems like it's kind of dying, in my opinion. Like, not like the integrity of it. Like, I don't give a shit about Christianity really as a religion. Like,
yeah, like Christianity TM.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. And it seems like because it's going away from those type of beliefs, you know, and like almost hard upbringing, that like it's getting too like wishy. I don't know. Like, it's just, I don't know. That's a whole nother topic. Christianity is a loaded gun.
It really is. And how it's like,
and how
interweaved
it's used,
with American culture.
How it's, yeah, how it's, yeah, how, yeah, dude, it's, yeah, that could, we could talk about that topic for like three episodes, I think.
Yeah, we could definitely,
like,
have
the pros and cons, and
we,
like,
we should have
the blood.
Vinny on for that one.
Yeah, like just the bloodshed it's caused, but then like some of the good things it's done. I don't know, there's a lot. There's a shit ton.
There's,
but
definitely
what religion is not bathed in blood, really? Like, if you think about it.
Exactly. Bathed in blood. And I was about to say baby in bathwater.
Yeah.
Or a baby in bath blood. Like, yeah. Like, there's, you don't, like, at least me, I'm like, you don't want to throw it all out. Like, I don't ever want to ignore or downplay any of the costs that religions have caused across history. And
yeah.
The downsides of it and all of that. But it's like, there's, for me, it's more just like humility for like the mystery of it. And like, we don't know what seed of truth has been developed in those things. And we can't simply throw it all out. We need to understand it at least first. That, I don't know. That's kind of where I fall into it with that. But yeah, that's definitely an ep, a future ep.
Yeah.
One thing kind of on the realm of like the subconscious, stuff, like people also say like programming your mind, or they'll use the analogy of like your mind is software, or like the universe is a simulation and you can program the simulation. Like, that's what a mind is capable of doing. And it's a similar inquiry of thought. This may be more like tech like techie, like religion, yeah. Like the simulation.
It's thing, what which, it kind of feels like. It's that's what it's becoming in a uh-huh. way. It's weird.
Well, and I actually, I think there's actually the simulation, actual simulation argument, if laid out correctly, which we could talk about at some point, but it's a good argument mm-hmm. and there's like mathematical foundations to it, but it's also the way that it's kind of been blown up in culture recently, you know, it's, mm-hmm. it's funny and it's entertaining, but it kind of with that whole subject, there's a guy who named Jeff Booth, who wrote a book called The Price of Tomorrow, which is really good. It's just a book about how our economic system is basically misaligned with what technology does, which is technology just simply makes us more productive. Mm-hmm. It makes things cheaper, makes prices go down, and we have an economic system that's forces prices to go up.
Yeah.
It's kind of a simple idea of a book, but besides that, that's Jeff Booth. That's what he's most known for now. He's also like a tech entrepreneur and made companies and all that sorts of stuff. But he randomly like drops this thread months back, December 31st, 2020, that's kind of on this topic. He says, 32 years ago, I was given the following questions, and every day since, I've read them when I wake up and before going to sleep. Through all the ups and downs that life throws, the questions have helped me understand that it is not outside events or people or things, but our thoughts to them that control us. So he's almost saying the basically what we're talking about without saying it. And then he shares this quote that's kind of the idea behind why he keeps the questions and reads them. And the quote is from Frank Outlaw. It's, "Watch your thoughts. They become your words. Watch your words. They become your actions. Watch your actions. They become your habits. Watch your habits. They become your character. Watch your character, for it becomes your destiny."
Yeah, I could pick like five different verses from five different religious texts that say the same thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, and the meme equivalent I think of is like, have you seen the domino meme where it's like a super tiny domino?
I don't know.
And then a slightly bigger domino and then a slightly bigger domino? It's just like, it's a meme of a guy pushing over a tiny, regular-sized domino. And there's like seven dominoes in a row. But each domino is like twice the size of the next
one. Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know, that's kind of like the first one's like thoughts. And then the last one is like destiny.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of a snowball effect or like an argument cascading events. But
that's kind of my theory. I've been trying to really... I want to talk about this in the future too, but like the topic of anarchism, like we've talked about it briefly off the show. That's kind of like where I have started with these, these like beliefs or like that political alignment is like, you start with thinking, you know, you start with those thoughts of just not allowing certain, I don't know, hard times or troubling issues to penetrate your thoughts. Like you keep your thoughts zoned in about, in this instance, about politics, like I'm speaking, like when when I'm thinking of things in my political scope, that I think it's very important to keep your thoughts about you, like what you actually think. Don't sway, you know, especially with nowadays political, I don't want to say climate because everyone says that, but political climate.
Yeah. And it's just like the quote again, like it says, watch your thoughts. They become your words. You know, it starts with like, it starts with watch your thought. And just the idea that like, it's just a thought. It's, it's the lightest, most immaterial thing. Like how much mass does a thought have? Like,
yeah.
I don't even know. That's a whole other interesting topic. Honestly, you could talk about, but you know, like it's something that you can play with. You can play with your thoughts.
Yeah, or they can play with you. Like if you allow, if you have a weak mind and you, I mean, think about when you're a kid and your mind is weaker because it's younger and it hasn't experienced as much. You can easily, like, be your mind can easily manipulate you into believing there's something in your closet, there's something under your bed, you know, there's something that's going to eat you at night. It's the same thing. It just, when you become an adult, it's like real world things are going to eat you. Real world things are going to swallow you. Real world, you know, And you have to be able to strengthen that mind so you can't, you can just watch the thought come in and out. Like you can watch it kind of just exist and you're like, well, that's crazy. Like I can see that that thought is pretty crazy. I came up with, or my brain came up with it, but I'm not gonna delve into it.
Yeah.
It's very important.
Yeah. And like you're, I mean, you're mentioning anarchism and like, I just feel like, I don't know, like if you start to embrace something like anarchism, that puts such a, that's such a heavy type of individualistic belief framework. That instantly, if you dive into that, you're kind of saying like, oh shit, I'm taking ultimate responsibility for myself and my world.
Yep.
And like, once you realize that, if you have thoughts going off in your head all the time, that's just like, you're a loser, you can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of just, once again, pragmatic. You're pragmatically like, well, shit, I shouldn't have these thoughts. Like, I'm not going to make it out there
like, right.
as an individual agent trying to, you know, survive and make, like, I'm not going to make it. If I'm just shooting myself in the foot, if I'm damaging myself.
Yeah.
And and there's something weirdly about taking ultimate responsibility. There's something about that that's, I mean, selfishly kind of can just bring peace.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know,
I'm excited for the experiment. I said, it's kind of an experiment. I wouldn't claim to be that because it's a very broad term too. But it is, I think it's an important exercise that I think everyone should try sometime.
Well, all these things we're talking about are experiments and exercises and, you know, there's very little that we are full, that we could say we're experts on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you're very right. It's like a daunting title and a daunting task to completely like reject any type of authority or any type of anything really and think to yourself, I'm on my own. I'm going to provide for myself. This is how reality is. This is how it's going to be. It's pretty much what it is. There's way more to it, but briefly,
And you know, in different people, have different interpretations and stuff like that. And, you know, like that isn't even the name I would put on my belief system. I don't have a complete belief system, but generally, like,
I don't know if anyone in their 20s does, and now I'm noticing that too.
and maybe that's a good thing. Like, you should probably be exploring. Like, I want to be, well, there's a term, strong ideas loosely held.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of my goal is to have that. And the strong ideas that really stick around and they don't get replaced, you know, because they're loosely held, don't get replaced by a stronger one.
Right.
Those are the ones that are like, okay, this is likely to be true because I'm looking for answers constantly. I'm looking to update, but I'm not finding anything. But what was I going to say? Yeah, I don't. But for me, like, it wasn't anarchism, but more like stoicism or stoic philosophy, which is kind of getting popular, you know, whatever. But the writings from these Stoic philosophers is very much in that same realm. It's kind of just like humility, take ultimate responsibility, you know, act with virtue, think with virtue, be totally consistent.
It's kind of a martial artist approach in a way.
I mean, that kind
of reminds me of that.
Very similar to that.
Or like a samurai.
but, you know, less strict, like the Stoics believed, you know, drink up the good things in life and all of that. Okay. But
I need to do more research on that. I've heard of it. I never really read anything about it.
Yeah. I mean, the go-to text is Meditations by Marcus Aurelius. And this is an amazing book because it was never meant to be published. This is Marcus Aurelius's personal journal that he probably never wanted released to anyone. And Marcus Aurelius was really one of the most fascinating great leaders of the Roman Empire and like really turned things around and like earned the respect of people, though not to say that like he had, I don't know, like not to say that he didn't go to war and kill people. And obviously it was the Roman Empire and all of that, but, you know, he was a standout leader near the end of the Roman Empire. If you've seen the movie Gladiator, fuck, I don't remember what his name is, but Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah.
He's like kind of the son that inherits the crown and then becomes like a little more sadistic and abusive. Well, his father in that movie that dies at the beginning of the Gladiator is Marcus Aurelius. Like, and that's the timeline. So Marcus Aurelius' son, ironically enough, was one of the ones who very much undid all of his father's work and kind of nailed in maybe the end of the Roman Empire, you could argue. But Marcus Aurelius, like, he was raised with philosophers and raised being taught Stoic philosophy by Cato. And in this journal, you read this journal, Meditations by Marcus Aurelius, it's, you know, 1,000 plus years old. And it's, he starts out and he's just talking through his weaknesses. He's talking about how he doesn't want to get out of bed in the morning and how he has to remind himself that he needs to do the work of a human. Mm. And that no matter what that work it is honorable and it is right. And, you know, it's kind of dressed in like all of these themes and language that we don't quite relate with, like virtue.
Right.
Like that's a term that Americans don't
fucking know.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't mean anything to us, virtue, but like it meant a lot to them. But it wasn't like a specific god they're necessarily worshiping. Like they believed in a lot of gods, but it kind of gave them also this weird thing that a lot of people have nowadays, was just like a scientific humility or respect for nature. Mm. Like they respected that nature was more intelligent to them and they wanted to align themselves with nature. Mm. And that was what was virtuous.
Do you remember the Book of Virtues?
The Book of Virtue. No.
Google that real quick. Or look that up real quick.
Okay.
I think it was a TV. It was a animated show.
Wait.
Yeah.
Literally. No. Who was it? Grant was telling me about this last night.
Really?
Because I asked him the question. I was like, did your mom ever tell you that patience is a virtue when you were a kid?
Let me see that shit. Let me see what came up.
Treasury of Great Moral Stories for Your Children. What a nice sounding thing.
That's where I learned them, was from a TV show called The Book of Virtues.
Well, the funny thing is, I was telling Grant, I was like, people would always tell me this, like, patience is a virtue. And I would hear it, but I didn't know what the word virtue meant, literally. So I would just be like,
oh, I found whatever. It. There's a buffalo. There's some kind of cat. Dang, man. That's a throwback right there.
Shit, that looks 90s as fuck.
Yeah, dude. Awesome. If you've seen Adventures from the Book of Virtues,
I love you. But yeah, Meditations by Marcus Aurelius. Like, it's a crazy book. You can find like free PDFs online. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of, it's fascinating to read it. Because just how, since you know it wasn't supposed to be released, and like just the humility in the pages, and like it's kind of like reading Proverbs or something like that. Just like verses of wisdom, you know, how to deal with people, how to deal with pain.
I guess, oddly enough, a virtue that I learned was patience, and it was with my family. And I guess it's the virtue that they've always taught. Like my grandpa taught me, at least, about patience was through hunting. I mean, you would sit for 3 or 4 hours and not have to move, speak. Literally, you would be meditating. Like, you'd literally be sitting. I would, many times I'd be sitting against a trunk of a tree and it's dark and the sun is rising and you're just watching
it's
it.
It's just totally silent.
Totally silent. You're like 14, 15 years old, maybe 13 too. Like, and just sitting and watching everything happen. And like, if you got to pee, you just sit there. Like,
yeah.
And then finally, like, after you, it's so hard to exist like that for humans, I feel like, now especially, because I didn't necessarily have to eat that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I could go to McDonald's. But like, back then, I'm sure it was way easier to have that patience to sit for 3 or 4 hours for like an animal to come. But then it was for that age and the time period, for me, learning patience that way was like excruciating.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to do other shit.
Well, it makes sense that, you know, if you if that's what you have to do to get your food, is like sit and wait for 3 hours.
And that's what they did at one time.
It makes sense you would get in touch with your subconscious.
Yeah, exactly.
Or like whatever spirit or soul.
I attribute any mental strength to that kind of period of my life. Even though I didn't like it at the time and I hated it, like I attribute a lot of the, you know, the few or whatever you call it, like any mental strength I learned in my life was probably from that.
Yeah.
Other things too, but from that for sure.
Yeah. And you know, one thing we can probably close out the topic after this, but like, I guess just the other side of this whole coin, you know, we've been talking about all these adjacent ideas that kind of dive in the subconscious and the mysteries of how your thinking can affect life or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like the other side of the coin, you know, there's this whole self-help industry.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's people that are in self-hell.
Like, yeah, for real. Yeah.
Like self-help hell. They're in self-hell.
That's a good self-help book title.
Yeah.
Are you in self-help?
That's a good idea. I should write a self-help book about how self-help doesn't help you yourself, and I'm going to call it self-hell. But then I'm going to become a self-help hellish guru hellscape myself.
A self-hell from demon, or a demon from self-hell.
Exactly. But anyway, self-help. Yeah, so like a lot of people, they just, it kind of feels like, okay, so you know how when you're a kid and you watch a samurai movie or something, mm-hmm. like that just watching the whole samurai movie, when it's done, you're so primed, your imagination is so primed, you feel like you're a karate mm-hmm. kid yourself, and you're like ready to go play karate with your friends or whatever, or mm-hmm. pretend. And so that's just kind of a classic way that like humans learn. Like when we see something we admire, we mock it in our own heads, or we mimic it, like mm-hmm. monkey see, monkey do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's best exemplified in kids. But I think that same effect takes place in self-help, where like you can watch the YouTube video, the self-help YouTube video, and kind of like you're posturing yourself as if, you know, this information or this person is like kind of conducive with yourself, and it basically it just feels like you're doing something.
Mm.
It feels like you're making effort when really you're just sitting back and doing more consumption,
mm-hmm.
which is likely where people do to even need self-help.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I feel like there's more and more like, and then also these ideas, the self-help ideas, they're predatory in a subtle way,
mm-hmm.
where they don't empower, they empower you to seek authority.
Yeah.
In a different type of authority with a different type of dress up.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, like when you see the numbers of views on like these videos or how popular these books are that come out, but then you see how most Americans are living,
right?
Like the Netflix numbers or something
add
like
up.
That.
Yeah.
Or even YouTube numbers, like this is one I know off the top of my head. 2 billion people watch more than an hour of YouTube every day.
Whoa. What the fuck?
2 billion people, more than an hour of YouTube every day. Yeah. And it's like, how many, you know, what percentage of those people are on the self-help algorithm, you know, hamster wheel?
Right.
And yeah. And so I think that's the other side of the coin and the secret. And a lot of these influencers and, there's a bunch of names I could lump in here. I'm trying to think of what that guy's name is.
The only self-help book that I've been into is one we both read. What was it? And I was going to mention it on the All Our Failed Project episodes too. And I was actually going
to... How to Fail It.
Everything and Still Succeed.
Or How to Fail It, Almost Everything and Still Win Big or something
like
that.
Yeah, that's what it is. The guy who created Dilbert.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's the only... I wouldn't even consider that a self-help book, but it helped me.
Yeah, it kind of is. It was that was cool though, because he lays out like all of his failed projects on one page.
Yeah,
and it's like restaurant number one, restaurant number two.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And like
tried
all
to
of
make
these.
A video game. Tried to like any ideas that I'm sure lots of Americans have had.
Uh-huh.
Like, very similar ideas.
Yeah. That is actually a book I like. And I like it because it doesn't tell you what to do. It just gives you, like, mental models to think about certain
things. So it's kind of like a biography in a way. Like,
yeah, a little bit of a
self-biography almost, because it's written by him, but it's like a self-help at the same time. I would look it up. If you're interested, look it up.
Yeah. Yeah, for most people who, like, have the desire, they, like, need that self-help information. It's like, traditionally, that's what would be philosophy or religion. You know, like, if you're saying, you're going to learn philosophy, it means you're going to think about the deepest thoughts humans have ever thought with the deepest thinkers, and to consider them for yourselves and think how you want to conduct yourself, you know. And that's what these people are like. That's the itch these people are trying to scratch. But the self-help, bubble, it's so shallow that it doesn't actually give you anything. So yeah, it empowers you to trust authority, but it's disempowering in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, like, self-help, I feel like a lot of people are there, and just diving into that whole world, like, this is what I'm left kind of thinking. It's like, wow, there's a lot of mystery, and I put a lot of weight on the subconscious and how powerful thinking is, but I don't know how far it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I'm humbly considering the fact that a lot of people fall into the cracks of self-help, and I don't want to be that person, so... Yeah. It's kind of had me kind of dipping in and mostly dipping out of that world and finding philosophy and science and stuff like that. That's a little more, just a little less, I don't know, cross, just trying to take advantage of me, I guess, maybe.
That's why I've been trying to eat healthier and be active, is because I don't want to reinforce negative habits on my mind then too. Yeah. Working out is a great tool to strengthen your mind also, because you got to tell yourself to keep going when you don't. And at the beginning, I was excited because I was like, I'm going to whip my ass into shape. Let's do this. And now, 3 months later, every day, I'm like, I don't want to do this. Five thoughts every day before doing it.
Just staring at your fucking shoes.
Yeah, like, I don't. Or I'll be at work. I'm like, fuck, I got to go home and fucking run. Like, you get home from work and all you want to do is take a shower and, like, watch Netflix or YouTube or something and play a video game, play guitar. Nope. Run a mile. That's strengthening your mind.
Yeah. And it's those simple things. Like, you don't need, once again, someone else's winning lottery ticket numbers. Like, just stick to the tried and true. Go run. Go sit and think and ponder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go, like, be in the sun.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, lift heavy rock.
Right.
Like, yeah. That's my shortcut. That's the thing I say when...
That's a good...
Well, it's from a meme, I don't remember if I took it specifically from a meme, but, like, the bell curve meme. But it's kind of just a thing that's, like, a meme-y way of saying, do this simple, dumb... It's a great thing that your grandpa did and your great grandpa and your great, great, great. And so for me, it's just like, oh, I'm complicating things. Just lift heavy rock.
Lift heavy rock.
Stand in sun.
Yeah. Sit next to tree.
Yeah. Eat meat or whatever it is.
shoot gun.
Yeah. I'm glad I'm not in self hell.
Yeah. I was getting close. I felt like that's why I made the drastic switch. Because I was thinking more of the concept of hell is just on earth. And then I was like, well, it is if you create it around you.
So yeah.
It's kind of the same thing.
That's all. But, yeah. It's all about responsibility, I feel like. But I don't know. There's tons of nuance. There's people who's have mental disabilities and stuff like that.
True.
Trauma or things like that that you make it to where it's not as simple
as
we're talking about. And we could never fully consider.
Well, and there's also things that I probably shouldn't try and heal with, you know, running and lifting and just eating healthy food, you know, like not to say that just being physical and active is going to get rid of a weak mind, because it definitely doesn't. There's plenty of people with a weak mind that are strong as fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not like perfectly correlated.
Yeah, you got to get 50-50 of like strengthening your mind by thinking and or talking and going to therapy or getting help like from other people. And that's where people with mental illness that can't really, you know, control how the cards they're dealt, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, it is very different for them.
Yeah, or doing math.
Yeah, yeah.
I was looking through all these. I have all these fucking old notebooks from years back, and I found my notebook from when I was trying to get my GED so that I could go to college, so that I could become a software engineer. And I was doing 8th grade, 9th grade math in this notebook, and I just like, I remember just crying at my desk as a 22-year-old or whatever, however old I was, 23, just like feeling like I'm 10 again, just crying at my desk doing math.
I don't get it.
Why do they have to introduce letters into it? And I don't know. And like that's the stuff still to this day that's like, when I think about mental strength, it's like you can, when you sit down with some math at your desk, you can just feel the resistance. It's fucking heavy.
I hate it. I need to, I need to do that. I need to get better at, I need to,
bro, go do some fucking long division.
Dude, when I first got prescribed Adderall a couple years ago, I did nothing but algebra for like 2 weeks.
Really?
Yeah. Cause my brain was just like, let's do math.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, no, I don't like Adderall, but
Adderall algebra.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, my brain was like Adderall algebra. Let's do it, bro. Let's go. And then, I was doing free algebra on the internet. Like Corey, my roommate, was like, "Why?
So what the fuck are you doing?" Yeah.
And I told someone I was doing it, and they're like, yeah, you're on Adderall. But
that's funny. The one time that I took Adderall, prescribed or perhaps not prescribed, I was like, yeah, I don't really feel it, like an hour or two in. And then all of a sudden it was 3 a.m. and I was like,
your teeth trying are becoming to get my powder. You're just like,
I was trying to get my friends to race me, and they had already, we had already been racing.
Yeah.
And I was like, why doesn't anyone want to race anymore? And then I realized I said that. And then I looked at my phone. It was 3 a.m. And I was like, we're racing down the neighborhood street at 3 a.m.
But yeah, you know, dude, that shit sucks unless you really need it, but that shit sucks.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Like it's, I can't even think about how that might improve my work and my productivity, specifically as a coder, but it's like, no, I'm not even going to fucking touch.
Yeah, it could, but next thing you know, you're going to be like, for those not seeing, or like hunched down like a fucking T-Rex, and your hands are going to be up, and you're just going to be like, really tense.
Yeah.
I noticed like when that shit is no joke.
See, I'm more of like, well, you know how, have you heard like software engineers at Google, like microdosing? Like,
yeah.
Have you seen those news stories? Like, there's a bunch of stories.
I'm a full on supporter of microdosing shrooms compared to Adderall, because it has the same effect, at least in my brain and in my body. When I microdosed mushrooms, it gave me that feeling of an Adderall, for me, like it just heightened everything, but without the ill effects of gritting my teeth, being super tense, super irritable, not eating, like none of that happened. It was completely different. It felt normal.
Yeah. I've tried microdosing a few times, and, I found it to kind of be like that, how you described it. It's just a little bit of a turn up, like tweak. Yeah. The colors are a little bit more vibrant, and there's kind of a slightly stimulated focus.
It's interesting because kratom is kind of the same way.
Ooh, I've tried kratom.
I'm not the biggest fan of it, but It kind of has the same effect where if you use a lot, it becomes a, becomes kind of like an opiate. It like, well, no, the dosage, if you take a high dosage, it is similar to an opiate. If you take a smaller, dosage, like a microdose, it is a stimulant.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting to try, but it tastes like shit.
Yeah. Well, people use it to try and get off of opiates. Right.
Right. Yeah. But if you sprinkle like a little bit, it's like coffee. Mm-hmm. It's weird. I don't know why it does that, but shrooms kind of does the same thing. You eat a lot, you kind of trip and you feel relaxed. You feel like you ate a bunch of edibles. You eat a little bit, your brain gets torqued a little bit.
And yeah.
Speeds up a little more clear. I don't know. Something about it. It's cool.
Yeah. I would try it again. I had it with like sweet tea and it was like, yeah, I don't fully remember it.
But I one time just took a big ass spoonful and chugged some water.
Well, it's a plant. Friend, it's grinded. It's like literally a ground up plant. It's the most powder.
Bitter taste. Yeah. Like take black coffee and times it by 30.
Mm-hmm.
We could talk about drugs one day. Save it.
We talked about drugs.
Just more in depth drugs.
Yeah, we need to get someone who's done a lot more drugs.
Yeah, that's cool. That'd be cool.
So DM us if that's you.
Yeah. But like in a research healthy way. Not like a lot of I don't know. Yeah. If you're just doing a bunch of glass, like I think we're good.
Yeah. But maybe, I mean, still message us either way.
Yeah. Love to hear from you.
Josh, you've been hearing a lot about Dogecoin again.
Yeah, dude, every day on Twitter. I don't know shit about it. I know you do, but I just keep seeing people to the moon.
Yeah, like, yeah, Doge to $1.
It's at what, like 44 cents?
I don't know, man.
I think it's at 44. I think it's almost at. Well, no, if it was at 50, I'm pretty sure people would be having parties. Yeah,
probably moving up towards 50 cents. I'd say, but
what does that mean in the Bitcoin world?
What does that mean in the Bitcoin world? What it means is that...
What does it mean in the Gus coin world?
There is no Gus coin.
So yeah, are you going to make an NFT, bro? Is that how it works? God, a Gus coin?
See, I'm... There's a whole... I'm not even going to open up all the reasons, but there's a whole panacea of reasons that are very good on why I think that Doge and NFTs, every altcoin, Ethereum, shit all of coin. Them... Shitcoin, yes. They all fit into that category, and we'll have an episode about it. I hope. Here's what Bitcoiners think and know. What's happening again is another hype cycle, and a bunch of people who don't understand what Dogecoin is or any cryptocurrency, they're all kind of just piling in and speculating and trying to get rich. But really, behind the scenes, there's some smart people with money who are pulling the strings. Not that it's fully manipulated, but there are people that are taking advantage of the lack of knowledge, and they're getting ready to do some good old rug pulls. That's
it. Seems
what we call
too good
them.
To be true, like the amount of people that are stoked.
Like, yes, it is a
well, and the amount of people that are like, I don't really know what this is, but I'm dumping my money into it. Like, yeah. And that's like the tweet.
Like, there's people like. People like this guy, I hadn't talked to him in years. And, you know, I've been talking about Bitcoin for years and telling people, like, buy Bitcoin, learn about Bitcoin, Bitcoin this, Bitcoin that. And then, you know, guy hasn't seen me for years. He's like, hey, so you're still into Bitcoin? Like, yeah. I bought Dogecoin. And it's just like, okay, cool. And he's like, was that a good decision? It's like, no. And I probably told you, in fact, I guarantee I told you 3 years ago to not buy anything but Bitcoin. And here you are 3 years later, you bought it at the top because you saw a tweet.
Yeah.
And now you're telling me someone actually knows about it to try and have me say like, oh yeah, that's a good decision. No, it's not a fucking good decision. You're going to get rug pulled. You're going to get wrecked.
So like what? They basically won't get the money that they are thinking they're going to get? Like rug pulled?
Well, rug, that's just a phrase. It just means like pump and dump. Like you're going to buy really high. The price is going to crash overnight. and you're going to be down 40%.
So what's the thing?
And that's because other people took gains
from your money. If it gets to 100, then what happens? If it gets to $1, then what happens?
You know, some people are going to dump it. Maybe it'll keep on going. The thing is, you never know. And people with lots of money, they can
control that. Yeah.
They can't control it, but they can, as much money as they have, you know, if Dogecoin is a bill, I think Dogecoin is like $10 billion market cap right now, which is fucking insane. But, you know, if someone has 500 million, so 0.5%, or wait, that's 5% of the market cap of Dogecoin, they have 5% of it that they could kind of move around at will. Well, they could, in the short term, they could move the price in such a way to where they could wreck noobs and wreck them out of their trades and then take profits off of them, basically taking their money. And, you know, it's just classic stuff that happens. It's just like, it's strange that this is the phenomenon that everyone's like running around, because it's a meme. Mm-hmm. When it's like, hey, the real thing's right here, Bitcoin, like, it's the real fuck you money.
I feel like that fits Americans pretty good, though. They're not going to pay attention to the things that would make sense if they would just learn about it. They'd rather talk shit on Twitter and support a meme. I mean, that's pretty spot on for being an American, I think, unfortunately.
You know, like, Doge is still better than all the other shit coins, though, because the other shit coins are telling you, they're like, we're building the future and our protocol is truly decentralized and no one wink can control it. And, you know, and they're getting all these people that are like, oh, this is the future and I'm going to hold it all the way down to zero and, like, I'm putting all my money in it. And it's like all a bunch of vaporware, or a lot of it's vaporware, and a lot of it is, they don't reveal how it actually works, such as Ethereum, which is the second biggest cryptocurrency. And it's like, they claim to be ultrasound money and claim to be decentralized, when even someone who's like me, who's not, well, I guess I can't say that anymore. I guess I'm pretty technical. But anyway, like, it's easy to tell that they're not decentralized. Because literally Jeff Bezos could turn off like 49% of the Ethereum network, because that most of it runs on AWS.
Oh.
And there's a reason that Ethereum runs on AWS and Bitcoin runs on tens of thousands of individuals, you know, computers in their private own. Like, there's lots of nuance going on there that people don't understand. But, you know, all of that to say, crazy mania is going on with crypto and the stocks and with people's monies. So I said people's monies.
You know, I'm just still pissed monies, that I can't even, I'm so broke that I can't even afford to put 10 bucks back. I really can't.
You're not missing out.
That's what sucks.
It's like, whose line is it anyway? Like, the rules are all made up and the points don't matter. Like, that's what, at least for me, that's what the numbers mean at this point, because it's all, a lot of it's going to go crashing down and a lot of people are going to be hurt. So, in fact, I saw a Reddit story, or like a Reddit post, that was like 20-year-old kid, and he's like, hey, like, help, I'm in 1.5 million in debt and I need advice. And you
not from, okay, I thought it was something to do with putting it into like,
no, it was crypto. Trading crypto.
Oh, okay.
And it's like, holy now fuck. I'm 1.5 million in debt. Okay. I'm 20 years old.
I thought
old.
You were just saying he's in debt. I was like, oh, I'm not, I don't want to laugh at that. But no. If it's because of crypto, then.
Yeah. You know, it's some poor kid who traded himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, seven figures deep. And yeah, you know, those are the stories that it's like, fuck, that's what happens.
Yeah.
You know, like, you don't want to be that wrecked.
Right. Yeah. That's what I'm worried about.
Well, you know,
if I could afford it, that's what I would be worried about.
That's why you just buy a little bit of Bitcoin every week and you don't sell it. It's the simple, that's the lift heavy rock of, of 2021. Of the whole crypto world. It's just like, buy Bitcoin, put it away.
Mm-hmm.
Don't pay attention to the news.
Good advice.
Yeah.
Try it out for a month and see what happens.
That right there, if you ever talk to someone who's financial, that right there is the best performing investment strategy of the last decade. And so that it didn't used to be the case. So now whenever people think they're financially savvy and they talk to me, I'm like, by, you know, lift heavy rock strategy outperformed all of Wall Street and, and, all of the banks and all that. So you can't tell me shit.
Yeah.
But with all that said, don't get wrecked on Doge, though. It would light me up a little bit to see it hit a dollar. That would be pretty funny. But people will get wrecked, so it's sad at the same time. But whatever.
Well, I think that's a wrap.
Yeah.
Nestle, 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 Nestle.
Thanks, y'all.